Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the show. Today we have Ryan Pills,
Journeyman Dan,
Kevin Delp,
and Melissa Delp
in the house.
All right, we are here, the Fab Four.
Yes, I like it.
We are glad that you are listening to our podcast, whether you're in the car, at home, at work, running, exercising, whatever. But today we're going to talk about board games. Our agenda for this podcast is games that we've been playing and enjoying. Then we'll do our Kickstarter conniption segment about games coming out the next couple weeks on Kickstarter. And then we're going to end the show with our topic for the podcast, which is our favorite cooperative board games. So look forward to that.
And did we ever talk about the finale of Winter Soldier?
Did we? Okay, well,
we can talk about it.
Okay,
after.
Okay. Okay, cool. For the after party, after the end credits roll, you can definitely check back at the end for our thoughts on the finale of Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Well, we played a fun game tonight, Fjordar.
Yes.
I think that's how it's pronounced. It was interesting. There was a lot of options. It was a little bit of trying not to have analysis paralysis, but I did win. So
you did?
I feel like it's a great game.
It looked
that's like, the only thing that it takes.
They've got some really cool minis. It's coming up later in the month, so I'm sure we'll talk about it more in a future podcast. But just really nice detail in their minis of these castles that look like it's supposed to be 1100s Norwegian Civil War is the theme.
It may almost be too detailed because there's so many types of pieces. It takes a little while to get it all out.
Oh, to sort it all out?
Yeah.
Yeah, like setup and all that stuff. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, setup and takedowns. There's a lot to it.
I definitely appreciate it too. Like, it helps with the immersion.
Yeah. And I will say, it's hard not to go into too much depth because we just played it. But one thing I really appreciated about it is it's a hex driven, looks like it should be this hardcore war game. But Ryan and I played the whole game and we had one battle because you can get points by going to different castles and bringing your heirs back home. You can build churches. You can burn down opposing churches. You can do
lots. I did hear during the show, like, Ryan's burning down too many churches. I was like,
I wasn't burning down enough churches.
Oh, okay.
Yes. That's how you get money.
Yeah, you can Viking, get money that way.
You pillage churches. Okay.
Yeah, so we'll get into some more of the mechanics and kind of how the game's played, but just some really neat things going on there, and it's not as heavy of a battle game as I was expecting.
Well, moving from the Cult of the Future, I'm going to be talking about the Cult of the Past because I learned how to play Bridge this past week.
Sweet.
Oh,
so I've not played that.
Bridge is a bidding trick-taking game with four players. You basically have a teammate, and you are trying to figure out how many tricks you and your teammate can win out of 13 tricks, because you basically take a deck of cards, 52 cards, and you just basically divvy them out between the four players, so that's 13 cards apiece, and then you're basically trying to figure out how many tricks do you think you can, you know. And there's all this, like, because Bridge has been around for such a long time, there's all this, like, nomenclature on how to do it, like, properly,
right?
And there's code that you can, like, throw to your teammate that's basically, like, figuring out what they what they might have or might not have. And
yeah, Kevin was telling me, he's like, if you say this, it means you have this type of card. And if you say this, I'm like, is that cheating?
Or no, that's how the game is.
Do other people know this code too?
Right.
So does the other team also know what you're saying?
Yeah. So the whole game itself is you are trying to, of course, win tricks. But in order to do that, you're looking at your hand of cards and you're looking at face cards. So jacks, queens, kings, aces. and you basically are giving point values to those cards. And then as you're putting your hand together, you can start saying like, oh, choose two hearts. And you're basically telling your partner, you have a good heart hand with face cards on those.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, but maybe you have lots of hearts, but not a lot of faces. So you could do like, you know, like in trick taking game, you could start doing a run because no one else can beat your hearts. So that would be like a weak heart. It's like all this, like it's very, very involved.
See, I didn't play bridge, but I grew up playing games like that. Mm-hmm. And that's just we played some of the old classic board games like Careers and Risk, but card games were the big thing in our house. And I love, you know, looking around the room, all these games that we have on the shelves. But I've found kind of a nostalgia value of going back and playing games like Bridge. 99 is another one that I was recently introduced to. That's another trick-taking game. It's a lot of fun sometimes to go back to just the simple. There is depth. It's not necessarily easy.
No.
There's strategy to it, but just simple card game fun.
Yeah. So definitely have been enjoying learning an older game and bringing that to the table. So, and I love trick-taking games, and we're going to talk about a few of those in our topic about cooperative games.
Well, at least one.
At least one.
I kind of wonder, this is just me thinking out loud, do you think part of the success of the crew being a classic trick-taking game, essentially, with kind of a theme put on and some engagement with the missions, but I kind of wonder if part of the success of that is hearkening back to people who grew up playing games very much like that.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Melissa, any games you wanted to talk about for games that we've been playing recently?
We got Merlin to the table.
Oh, yes.
From Queen
Finally,
Games.
With the big box version.
Yes, we have the copy of the big box, which is the base game of Merlin, and then a few expansions that had come out. And then it has a new expansion that came with the big box, Morgana, that I believe has three modules. This was the first time we had played a full game of Merlin, so we took it fairly easy. We played the base game. We put in one of the little queenies, which is a little tiny mini expansion with decrees, and then added in the Knights of the Round Table, which are basically individual player powers. So it wasn't drastically changing the base game because some of the expansions have extra boards or you're putting a different board on top of the rondelle. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's a circular board and each player has their knight, their character.
It's a roll and move game.
It is roll and move, but not Monopoly roll and move.
I'm teasing you.
So you're going to have four or five dice, a couple in your color, and then a clear die. You roll them at the beginning of the round, and on your turn, you play a die. And if it's your color, you're going to move your pawn that many spaces around the round table. And whichever action you land on, that's the action you take.
You have to move clockwise if it's your knight.
Yes. You have to move clockwise, but there's also a Merlin pawn that everyone basically can move once because of that white clear die, and that pawn can move either direction. So you're kind of planning out, oh, it can get here, but if someone else uses the die first, he's going to be in a different spot, and you're trying to collect certain things to complete missions, to gain points, to gain influence.
Yep. My asymmetric power let me move Merlin 1, 2, 6 places up to a certain number of times during the game. So I was a little bit more like, oh, I don't care where Melissa moves it. I can move it up to 6 if I need to.
So, yeah. And then some of the actions you can take, you can get flags and they have special powers that might let you use the spot that someone else is on or like transport across the table, things like that. So there is some mitigation that. Just roll and move aspect. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So it's, I believe it's a Steffenfeld.
Oh yeah.
Game. So
one
I
game.
Enjoyed it.
One game I've been trying out lately.
Sorry.
I played Sorry last night with my kids. Automobiles by AEG.
Oh,
I had never heard of that.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty. It was pretty popular a few years ago.
Man, how did I miss that? It's a racing game. And a lot of times racing games involve dice and a lot of luck there. But this, they did like a cube dice building style with it, where you draw seven cubes out and you can buy cards, which are actually cubes that then add more powers and give you strength. Your gear dice actually determine how far you can move based on what spaces are nearby. So that was, it's been really neat to not to have a racing game, because I like a racing game, without just the pure luck of, oh, I didn't roll the right numbers. Like I have more control with the cube drafting or bag building. There we go. So that's been a lot of fun checking that out on BGA. I haven't actually played it live in person, but that's been what I've been playing lately.
Cool. We have continued our Pandemic Legacy Season 0 campaign. We finished up September?
I think so.
I think we're getting close to the end, so we'll share more information about that a little bit later as we get closer. But I've been enjoying it. I'm not sure if I like it more than our Pandemic Legacy Season 1 campaign, but it's definitely different, which is great. It's not like same mechanic with new things going on. It's like a whole new game, which I really appreciate. And we played a game coming from Mr. B Games, a game coming to Kickstarter from Richard Lanius.
Oh, not that game.
That's a racing car game, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in our new episodes coming up, but right now we're going to get started with our next segment, Kickstarter Conniption.
Kickstarter Conniption.
This episode, we will be talking about five games coming to Kickstarter the next couple weeks, and Ryan is going to start us off.
First off, I'd like to talk about Baru. We have a playthrough of this coming up soon. It is actually a fun game. I've gotten a chance to play it. You are like explorers, I guess, and you're interacting with the native culture of the islanders of Baru. It's a rather large island in Indonesia. And what you have is, at the beginning of each round, you have a number of tokens with different numbers on them, and you have to decide, I think they're, sequential numbers, and you have to decide where you're going to place, what regions of the board you're going to place those in. There's like four or five regions, and some will give you resources, some will give you cards if you spend resources, and those cards let you build up like an engine. And then there's other regions where you can make like an offering to the gods there in Baru. And if you get a good synergy going, you can really get that engine to complement all of your offerings and just sort of take off. But the problem is you have to contend with everybody else for the best spaces in each region. So what you do is you've got these numbered tokens, and you try to figure out what you can win in each place. So maybe you'll play, maybe you don't care about going first. Like you could totally just go last in a region. So you might put your lowest number there, and then you might double up with two higher numbers in another region to ensure that you win that spot, the coveted first place spot of another place, so you can get more for less. And it was a lot of fun. I didn't win, but I'm looking forward to playing this again during our playthrough. So definitely check it out from Crafty Games, coming May 17th. Baru. Dan, what do you got?
All right, coming May 11th from Fireside Games is Castle Panic Deluxe Collection. So they are bringing in a new deluxified version. They've got new art.
It's a thing to do.
It is a thing to do. Wooden tokens, monster minis, and really cool thing here, they have the rotatable bases to track damage, so you don't have to deal with tokens all over the place. You can just twist the bottom of the base, and it will show what you have. You have plastic walls and towers for the base game and all of the expansions coming too. So they are also adding another expansion in addition to all the new stuff for existing expansions. So that sounds pretty cool. Definitely check that out. They've got their site, firesidegames.com. They've got some updates on that. Also their Facebook page. They've got some videos and in-depth looks at the minis and some of the new things that they're doing. So hop on over there. For the game, I don't know how many are familiar with it, but it's basically you guys are defending your castle. So you're working together as a team. It's kind of a lightweight type of game. And you've got hordes of enemies that come rushing in from all the different sides. So now you've got cool minis to do that with. And they're going to be coming at you. And you and your forces defend the castle from the on-rushing hordes. Again, that's May 11th, coming from Fireside Games. Castle Panic Deluxe Edition. Kevin, what are you looking at?
Well, I was going to talk about the new Paris plus the Paris expansion from Wolfgang Kramer and Michael Kiesling from Game Brewer. But I just found out that the date got changed to May 24th. So we'll talk about that in the next podcast. So I say, why not switch things up and talk about another game? So we're going to talk about Vengeance Roll and Fight from Mighty Boards. And this is a roll and write real-time game. And this is for 1 to 8 players. So
a real-time roll and write?
Yeah.
Sounds aggressive.
Sounds brutal.
It is. I mean, with the name of the title, Roll and Fight. Yeah. It's definitely an aggressive game, and you're trying to infiltrate your, I don't know if it's your opponents or some kind of gang members or something like that. This is a game where you're planning and fighting and doing a lot of things like you would in a roll and write type game with dice and stuff. So if that's and it's based off of the Vengeance sort of world that Mighty Boards has already created from David Turksey. So if that sounds interesting, check it out from Mighty Boards.
So I just want to jump in really quickly and hijack that a little bit. Because it made me think of another old school game that I grew up playing. It had multiple names. We called it Mississippi Madness, where you would roll a die, and if you got, say, a 6, whatever set number, you'd have to grab the pencil off the middle of the table and start writing 1 to 100. So like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, as fast as you could. But the whole roll and fight made me think of it because as soon as someone grabbed a 6, they would just reach over and like sometimes you would snap the pencil. You had like nails up your hands because it was as fast as you could just write 1 to 100.
I never heard about this game.
It was pretty awesome. Very high energy.
The only game that I know about that you're grabbing things from the middle is Spoons.
Yes. Yeah.
So
it could go along the same way. Right. But that was my experience with a roll and fight. So hopefully this has a little more depth to it.
Sounds like something that parents make up to keep their kids occupied.
For sure.
But why don't you write it 1 to 100? I'm like, why
but
would
it could backfire if you know people are getting stabbed with the pencil and that sort of thing.
Anyway, check it out. Vengeance Roll and Fight for Mighty Boards. Melissa, what do you got?
Coming May 11th is Mosaic, A Story of Civilization. This is from Forbidden Games and designer Glenn Drover. He also did Raccoon Tycoon and Railways of the World and many other games. So Mosaic is a civilization building action selection game. You're going to be taking actions, doing things like learning new technologies, founding cities, building projects, building wonders, recruiting and moving military units, increasing population, trying to build up your civilization. And there are several scoring rounds throughout the game. During some of those rounds, there's a area majority aspect of it. So if you're dominating regions with your cities and military units, you'll score. At the end of the game, there's also scoring for all the stuff that you've done during the game, your wonders, your cities and towns, projects, golden age cards. So it sounds like there's a little bit of a building up aspect to the game where you're collecting things and trying to advance your civilization so that you can score a lot of points at the end. So if you're interested in games that have that civilization building theme to them, then you might want to check out Mosaic, A Story of Civilization, coming May 11th from Forbidden Games. Ryan.
Coming also May 11th from Rose Gauntlet Entertainment is Keystone North America from designers Jeffrey Joyce and Isaac Vega. You may recognize Isaac Vega's name if you've ever played Dead of Winter.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's featured pretty prominently in my shelves, so I definitely recognize his name. This is a game about building the best interconnected ecosystem. So you've got plant and animal cards, and you're trying to basically draft the best engine of cards. They have different patterns that you're trying to fit together and just build a really great ecosystem. There's both a multiplayer way of playing where you compete with your friends for best ecosystem, and there is like a journal campaign book, I guess, where you can play through that either solo or co-op and just sort of travel across North America, Keystone North America, a journey through these ecosystems. So definitely check that out. Coming May 11th, Keystone North America.
Now, are we doing a playthrough of that?
We are. We're doing a playthrough of that and Baru. Check those out. Are we ready to move into our topic for the evening?
Let's do it.
All right. Do we have a cool sound effect? Here it comes.
Bum, bum, bum.
There it is. So our topic is our favorite cooperative games, our favorite co-op games. And we're keeping this pretty narrow because there's a lot of co-op games that could be sort of thrown into this topic, like semi-co-op, one versus many, things like that. But we're doing this purely co-op. So we're going to give a little definition here. This is a board game where everyone around the table is working together to help beat the game.
So you wouldn't include ones with hidden traitors?
No.
So Dead of Winter is not being slipped into this category.
Oh, man. I'm going to say no.
Okay. Kevin has spoken.
Purely what if you play without the variant that has the traitor?
Sure, go for it. You can make up your own rules. It's
okay,
fine.
Okay.
First on my list,
go for it, Ryan,
is Hanabi. This is not one I would play with beginners. Like, you have to have people that are willing to learn the game and have like kind of a rough idea of how to play games. So I've played with kids before and it's just a disaster. But if you play with the right kind of people, it can be a lot of fun. I've only played one perfect game.
Oh, really?
Ever. It was Katie and I took it as one of the games we brought on our honeymoon when there was downtime. And so we just had a lot of time between the two of us to play the perfect game.
You worked out that communication aspect.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, so Hanabi, that's one on my list.
Dan, I know one that you should be talking about.
That I should be talking about? Well, my first instinct would be to say Legendary.
But there is a Legendary that's purely co-op, isn't there, one of them?
There is. Actually, yeah, you're right.
See, I knew it.
Yeah, I would say
which
that
one is purely the one that's purely co-op?
I think one of the aliens.
That's what I was going to say. I thought Alien was the one.
Now, there still might be one of those things where, like, generally you're all just trying to survive the game and win, but you could count points, too. So I can't remember. It's been a while since I've played that one.
Okay.
If you take the traitor out of Dead of Winter, I would count that one.
Okay.
But if
I know many people that is an option. Is that something that you actually do? Or
yeah, that's okay. In the rules. If you don't want to play with the traitor, you can just
take that
card out.
I know it's in the rules, but is that how you play? That's my question.
That's how I've played.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard enough is what you're saying without the traitor.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I'm trying to think of many times I've played. There's always been a possibility of a traitor, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah. But,
But aside from those, I would probably have to say Pandemic Legacy Season 1. I just really enjoyed that whole experience.
That was on my list.
Yeah.
So, glad you talked about it. So, you played it with Ryan or someone else?
No, I played that with my wife and then another couple. And we got together once a month. Okay. And just
so, I'm pretty sure all of us, and Melissa and I played it with Alan and Karen. You played it with your wife and another couple. Ryan, you played it with Will and Sarah?
Yep, Will and Sarah.
And Katie?
Yep.
So we all have different experiences. Who was the military person that...
Oh, no spoilers.
What? Pandemic, like, come on. Season 1 has been out for...
Well,
no spoilers.
But that's one of the basic people. Like, that's...
Right. He was going to spoil more than that, I think.
Okay. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where it's like majorly changes the game.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was me.
That was Melissa.
That was my brother-in-law.
Okay. Do you remember who it was for yours, Ryan?
I don't. It's been too long.
I think he called him like Chuck the Bandage Barkley. I think that was his name. Yeah. Because he's the medic.
Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I do like that you can name your characters.
Yeah, that's fun.
So in Pandemic Legacy Season 0, you have a passport that you're using for part of the game and for the game. And there's basically three different characters that you can have, but they're the same character.
Aliases.
Three different aliases. So you can have three different names, and they have stickers that you place over the characters, like hats and glasses and shirts and hair and everything. Nice. So you can have three different outfits.
That's cool.
In your passport.
And they each have different powers. So depending on which alias you are, there's different things you can do.
Cool. I definitely want to check that one out.
I know if Will was here, I feel like he would say the mind.
That's true. He would definitely say that.
Yeah, I think that's
but
on
the
a
question
lot of
is
lists.
That a co-op game? Or is it just a co-op experience?
It is.
Is the Shadowrun game we played, is that co-op or was there a winner?
I haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh, okay.
It's coming.
Go for it, Ryan.
That was on my list, if it's truly co-op.
Which Shadowrun game?
Whatever one we played at the cabin. Crossfire.
Yeah, Shadowrun Crossfire, that is a co-op game.
Okay.
Yep. That is probably not one of the better games, but it's one of my favorites.
I mean, that's
it has
that's
a special place in my heart
for
being too difficult and kind of clunky, but I love it.
But see, I had a blast because you told me all about how you guys have such a hard time winning this, and then we played it twice and we won both rounds.
I know.
It so was I was like, yes,
I don't know what's
awesome.
Going on.
Dan yeah. was
Dan,
the
you just, you just need Dan now.
That's what it is. Dragon Man Dan.
That's right.
In the house.
So I don't particularly love a lot of co-op games, but there are certain...
She's going to rattle off a whole bunch she does like.
There are certain genres of co-op games there that I really do like, and those would be the escape room type games.
Okay.
So your exits, your unlocks, and then deduction games like Sherlock Holmes, Consulting Detective, and Chronicles of Crime, ones where you're trying to solve a mystery or puzzle together. I would put those at the top of my list of cooperative games that I really enjoy. The adventure games from Cosmos would kind of fit in there as well. And then narrative games, ones like Time Stories, where, again, you're kind of working together to solve this narrative aspect.
Especially the Hadal Project.
Especially the Hadal Project, since Kevin and I designed that one, and it was published under the Blue Cycle, the Revolution cycle. So, yes. So Time Stories is a favorite. And then not quite like those, but I would still put them in the narrative category, would be something like Mansions of Madness, Second Edition, and Journeys of Through Middle Earth.
Journeys in Middle Earth.
Lord of the Rings.
J-I-M-E. Journeys in Middle
in
Earth.
Middle Earth, yeah. Whatever that preposition is in there. So those are games where you take on a character and you're going through the story. They both are app-dependent because that's running the story for you and spawning the monsters and saying what happens. But I really do like the extra element of the app in those games. It makes it more immersive.
So for me, if I'm comparing Mansions of Madness and Journeys of Middle Earth, Lord of the Rings, number one, of course, the themes are totally different. The one thing I will say that Mansions of Madness has over Lord of the Rings is that it's not a campaign. It's like, oh, I want to play this scenario. I can go into the Mansions of Madness app and I can find whatever.
Yeah, and they give the time. So they're like, this one's an hour, this one's 4 hours.
So that's the one thing, but I would say that's the only thing. Journeys of Middle Earth, to me, is by far the better game because of the theme, the story. I feel like just the everything that's involved with your character development and all that kind of stuff is just so much better. We played it so many times.
Yeah, we played the first campaign, I think, two or three times, and we've played most of the other campaigns that have been released so far. It's also card-driven as opposed to
dice-driven. That's another thing I like. See, that's another reason I like that one. It's card-driven. So if you're going to get one narrative game that's a little bit bigger of a game, I would definitely go with... Right, Ryan? I mean, you've played at least...
Yeah, I got hooked, and then the fisherman walked away. And I was like, what? Come on. I need more. Give me more lines.
Is it because the people that were in your group had a baby?
They may have.
Yeah. Those people.
Yeah. I really enjoy Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Okay.
And I guess they just had a new Kickstarter. So that's probably up there. I don't know if it's on most people's list.
I actually do not enjoy that one as much, but this is personal. You can have.
We all make mistakes, Kevin.
That's right.
That we live to regret.
That's right. The crew was mentioned earlier in today's episode, and I would say that is one of the one of my new favorite cooperative games.
It's one of the ones that breaks the mold of the box that I mentioned earlier of the type of cooperative games that I like. But I do like trick-taking games, and I like the cooperative aspect of that one and the puzzliness of it. Mm-hmm.
So the one that that's currently out in the United States is the space version. There is one out already in Germany, which is a deep sea version, which I'm really looking forward to. Like, is it the same, but like just a little different, or is it like, do they totally change up?
It looks like the tasks are very different.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in it.
More variety.
Cool. I'm looking forward to that from Cosmos. That's from Cosmos. Yeah. What else do you have on your list? I know one thing that Ryan should have on his list that he hasn't said yet.
Zombicide.
There we go.
Yeah, I really love Zombicide. Unfortunately, I have two small kids, so it's hard now to set it up and prevent them from grabbing the miniatures or leave it up and not have them just...
So Simon just sent us the second edition Zombicide, and I was like, oh, it's just going to be a box with like maybe a couple add-ons or something like that. The box was very massive.
Yeah, it's like two cartons that have been slapped together. It's very big. There's a lot in there, and I'm looking forward to diving into it. I just got to find the time. I got to figure out how to get my kids out of the house.
Oh, that's great. Anything else from you, Dan?
Man, I'm drawing a blank. So I'm going to go with no. I'm sure they're out there.
You ever played Forbidden Island?
Yeah, that one didn't.
How about Forbidden Desert?
They just didn't grab me. They were fine games. It just wasn't something that I enjoyed wanted
those.
To rush
those were
off
some
to.
Of my first co-op games.
I will
a good
say,
introduction to co-op.
Probably the first co-op game I owned and still own is Escape from Queen Games. And that I have a lot of fun with that one. It's definitely chaos it's a real time dice rolling game, kind of like your Indiana Jones trying to escape a temple as it collapses. And if you don't make it out in 10 real time minutes, you lose. So you're running around rolling dice frantically, yelling at each other. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. You can play it a couple of times in half an hour. And my experience has been like, okay, like that was fun, but it's time to move on to something else because it's just a lot of high energy, a lot of just stressful, but it is a lot of fun. So that's the first one that I owned, Pandemic being the first that I played. So Escape has a special place in my heart.
Yeah, I think one of the first ones might have been Pandemic for us, but Shadows over Camelot.
Although it does have a traitor aspect.
Oh, it does have a traitor. Broke the rules.
It was on my list because it was one of the original ones. Mm-hmm. One thing I would say about, since we're Irish, it's already brought it up, Shadows of the Camelot, I love the theme, but the theme doesn't come through in the gameplay.
I'm playing two pair. I'm playing a full house.
I'm just like, oh, wah, wah, wah.
But it has fun little knight miniatures.
It does. Catapults.
Catapults. I don't even know. Is it still in print? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it is.
What?
No, well... It may be back in print,
okay.
But my oldest sister was trying to teach her kids about, you know, Arthur and those legends. Mm-hmm. She was looking at getting it, and it was going for like two or three times the retail.
Yikes. I'll sell it to her for $500.
It's pretty impressive.
It has the Merlin expansion in there too, which is really rare.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. We do have the Merlin expansion. Cool. That pretty much wraps it up for my favorite co-op games. Melissa, anything else come to mind?
I think I gave like a bajillion of them all at once and spewed them out.
I would say out of the detective ones that you mentioned, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective and Chronicles of Crime, But there's also the new one that we've been playing over at Richard's house, the Detective City of Angels. Mm-hmm. You can play that cooperatively.
Right.
It's not meant to be played. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's in the rules or something like that.
Yeah, I think it is a variant. The normal game is played...
One versus many.
Yes, with the chisel. But mm-hmm. it does have the story aspect in it.
I think Chronicles of Crime, because of the versatility that comes with the game itself, I have appreciated more than Sherlock Holmes. Although, Sherlock Holmes has a special place in my heart. So...
Yeah, I would definitely say some of the Sherlock Holmes boxes, at least in English, are better than others. There was at least one, I think the Carlton House one, where the editing wasn't as good and there were a lot of typos.
I give Sherlock Holmes like a pass because of the translation issues. I honestly wish some English, like there was an English editor that went through all of them and like, because there's so many mistakes in most of the most of the stories. So... It could be better. It could be better. Anyway, so that pretty much wraps up our show. So definitely tell us, send Will an email. Will@tantrumhouse.com about lots all the games that we should have talked about for our favorite co-op games.
Yeah, or go onto our Facebook page.
That's right. No, send Will an email.
Will's going to be like, why am I getting all these emails?
That's right.
Because, yeah. There are tons and tons of cooperative games. I mean, there's a huge, 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 huge one that has not been mentioned.
Gloomhaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's not my favorite. But we'll continue on.
All right. That's our show. Stay tuned later for our take on Falcon the Winter Soldier.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TantrumHouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
All right, so I'm pretty sure that we haven't talked about the last episode, episode 6 of Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, so sure enough, in the box was the new Captain America / Falcon suit.
That was the highlight of that episode.
It looked pretty sweet. Now, I will say this didn't detract from it, but did it not remind you of, was it Frozone from The Incredibles? Do you remember that guy?
Oh,
honey, where's my super suit?
I can see that a little bit.
I don't know if I see that.
He's got the goggles just like him. It's got the white.
Okay.
Obviously, it's wings, but...
I on the one hand, can admire, like, wow, this is, like, super accurate to the comics. On the other hand, I'm like, that is a dumb-looking suit.
So I watched the pitch meeting on this. You see the pitch meeting on this one? The suit did come up, and they're like... You protected your whole body except for the top part, the brain, the most important part.
Right.
I just didn't feel like he needed the side things going up the side of his face the goggles. He should have just had goggles. I mean, if he's not doing a full helmet, just goggles are fine. He doesn't need the weird side.
But the wings were cool looking.
Yeah.
They did a good job with that.
And I was wondering how he was going to carry the shield and the wings, so it was interesting having them like in the center of his back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just never thought through how is this going to work.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I had similar thoughts, but overall, I liked the way they brought it all around.
Do you feel like the story arc was? Did you feel like this was better than WandaVision, or just too different?
I think it was too different. I think I enjoyed just the story of WandaVision.
I do. I feel like the story was there's a better story. Like there was an overarching like you could actually like sort of well there's that mystery at the beginning, but like Falcon and Winter Soldier is like, where's this going? Just waiting.
So do you think anyone was surprised by the power program?
No.
Wait, no. There was a power? How do we know about this? Was this an after credit scene?
Yes. Mid-credits
scene. It's like, I don't know. In our household, we were calling it from like the first time she showed up.
Right? Yeah.
So I don't know if that was supposed to be a big reveal. And I don't know if I feel that now I don't have like knowledge of the comics and other things, but I'm like, would she really become that person?
I don't know. Power broker?
Yeah.
Sharon. Now, I don't see Sharon Carter becoming the power broker. Madam Hydra, though.
Yes.
I could see her being the power broker. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand. I know she's part of the comics, but I didn't really feel like she had that interesting of a, yeah. Part. In...
Are you talking about Madam Hydra?
Yeah. I'm like,
As someone who, like, I've only heard of Madam Hydra, I haven't, like, ever seen her before.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like they did enough with her character.
I was like, she showed up, like, twice.
Is it kind of calling to something else that they're going to be doing either in a movie or other shows?
Because maybe. I want to say there's a Captain 4.
Yeah.
That's, I've what, heard like, 2022 or 23? Like, it's a couple years off, though.
Still, I mean, they could have done something.
So you're obviously going to have her in control of U.S. Agent.
Sure.
So Hydra's kind of starting to come back.
I don't even know if he's coming back, but...
He might not.
I think they've set up for the West Coast Avengers, but I don't think they're actually doing anything with them. Because we have White Vision, U.S. Agent, and Hawkeye, I think, are all West Coast.
Okay. Interesting.
But I don't think they're actually doing anything with it.
One of the things that just, I don't know, I had a hard time buying into was like, okay, so Carter gets mistreated and sent off somewhere and she comes back and they're just like, oh, we treated you poorly and you probably have bad feelings about us, but here's your old job back in this super sensitive, secretive area. Mm. Like, I don't know.
There should be some.
And she's
some
been off in Madripoor doing
which is a
like
criminal area. Yeah. Maybe vet that job
definitely
offer a bit more.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, it's a comic book movie, so
yeah.
It was fun. I enjoyed the overall experience, but it's. I would say I'd go back and watch WandaVision again.
I've watched before WandaVision. I would watch this. We've watched WandaVision twice now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the sake of telling the story and progressing to a new movie and introducing some new characters, it was fine.
I'm looking forward more to Loki. So.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Loki looks good.
I mean, hopefully the trailers don't, like, I should say spoil us. But it seems like the trailers are leading me in a direction that, like, this sounds like it could be amazing.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not like Monsters, Inc., where it's like they show the best of the trailers. I like Monsters, Inc., don't get me wrong, but I don't know if you remember the trailers in Monsters, Inc. where it was like he's pretending he's Saturn or something. And it was like a hilarious trailer. And I was like, that is hilarious. This show's going to be hilarious. It was funny. But anyway, I'll get off my horse.
That looks good. And Shang-Chi looks really good, too.
Is that coming out this summer?
September, I think.
Okay.
That looks like it could be really cool. But again, maybe they put all the cool parts in the trailer.
That's what they do. They try to hook you. Yeah. They're like, guess what? Next week will be the cool one. Oh, we meant the next week.
That's right.
I definitely don't think Disney hurt their brand at all. I think they're going to keep drawing people in and getting people hooked on that.
They definitely had a good dynamic with the two main characters.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
The acting was great. I think the acting was fine for everyone. I'm just saying story-wise.
Sure. Yeah.
I felt like the lady who played Carly Morgenthau, she had the same sort of character issues that she did in the Solo movie, where they
talking about the red-haired curly girl.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't know enough about her to really care, and then they killed her off, so they can't do anything more with her character. Hmm. So I don't know. I wrote an article about it. It was interesting.
You wrote an article about
it? No, I read an
article. I'm like, wow, Ryan, and then, going to write those articles.
Someone also pointed out that at the very end, they changed the title card from Falcon and Winter Soldier to Captain America and Winter Soldier. But the whole point is that he's no longer the Winter Soldier. Like, he's put that behind him. He's not the Winter Soldier anymore.
That was also in the pitch
he's
meeting.
He's like the White Wolf or whatever.
It should have been Captain America and the whatever, White Wolf.
Yeah,
they should have changed
guy with the middle arm.
And Bucky Barnes.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. They should have changed both names.
Exactly, but maybe people wouldn't get it. Whatever.
Whatever. Come on. Give us the benefit of the doubt.
So what's like? Are you guys watching? Are you going to watch Bad Batch? Are you going?
Oh yeah, but I don't think we'll talk about that here.
No, that's fine. But
is that a
cartoon?
Cartoon?
What?
Yeah, it's another animated kind of like the Clone Wars type thing.
It's going to be interesting because it's going to show the transition of the clones into the Empire area. And I think some of them stay
that, that's
like
a Star Wars show. Did we just move from Marvel to
I think some of them it's the next stay big Disney thing. Like good guys and some of them join the
and
Empire.
Is What If an animated show?
I think some of it is. I don't know. There's like a What If in the timeline that looked like it was a movie.
Oh, interesting. Sure. Okay.
Haven't looked at that timeline for a while because it got all jumbled. Because we still haven't seen
Black Widow.
I just saw either today or yesterday, I think they released a new big promotional thing and it gave dates for a bunch of movies.
Captain America traveled back and fixed the timeline.
Oh, thank you, Captain America. Wait, the new Captain America or the...
Steve. There's only one.
The one on the moon.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm sure we'll check it out, whatever it is, but...
Yeah,
looking forward to it. And is Black Widow end of this month?
Oh, I think it's in the summer sometime.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening. Check us out in a couple weeks for our next podcast episode. Check us out online for all our live YouTube shows. Thanks for listening.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.